Oh, you might go pass your glass over.
Oh my god, I'm recording, Raymond.
Oh, please.
Welcome to the Brew Drink Run podcast, brought to you by the only website that promotes brewing your own beer, consuming the best craft beers in the world, and then running off the calories, brewdrinkrun.com.
Hey, welcome to episode number 199. Of the Brew Drink Run podcast. My name is Lee.
I am Keith.
I'm Raymond.
If you like the show, good on you. Also, you can listen on Spotify now. That's cool. This week on the show, this is our big show. We're going to talk about running. We're going to talk about home brewing for reals. For reals this time, you guys. I'm going to go a little bit out of order. I'm going to read a little bit of listener feedback. I'm going to jump right into this.
Do it.
It's been a while since we have read iTunes reviews on the show. We used to do it every now and then. Pick an iTunes review and read it on the show. Here we go. This review is by B-Stock. The title of his review is "Entertaining but Lost Focus." So we're off to a good start, you guys.
Did we ever have any focus?
Oh wait, this is the review. I made it through 190 plus episodes from December 7th, 2017 to January 31st, 2018.
What?
So obviously it's entertaining. Holy moly.
Dude.
All right, let me just say thank you for investing that much time.
Yeah, no matter what you have to say, that's bad. Yay!
And taking the time to write a review. I mean, you did.
Yeah.
A substantial part of 2 months of your life has been spent with us. Yeah. I feel like we're family, so whatever you say, I'm taking, obviously, here as constructive criticism. The podcast has given me a better appreciation for beer. Unfortunately, the brew and run portion had become a bit of a farce. I really enjoyed the past episodes where they recapped races and Andrew talked about homebrewing. Unfortunately, I think Raymond and Lee have brewed about 6 beers in the last 4 years. I think he's being generous.
That's generous.
That's generous. Yeah. I mean, honestly.
So obviously, he's being fair. Very fair with this review.
I appreciate that.
I do too.
Looking forward to Raymond's breakfast stout clone in 2025. 4 stars. 4 stars. I mean, we like 5.
Can you give us 4.5?
I don't think there's a half option. I think that
no half option. I appreciate that.
I think that's an honest 4-star review.
That's legit.
Dude spent a lot of time with us, and hey. We're all the better for it.
Yeah, so no focus.
I think we should just jump right into our first beer. And spoiler alert, it's a home brewer, everybody. B-Stock.
It's my clone.
Stop it. It is not. Do not take any credit for this. You get
Raymond is a liar. Ray Dog is a liar.
Our dog is a liar. A couple episodes we had a email come in to the show from our buddy Mike J. And Mike J. then sent us some beer.
Yes. So after Mike J. Contacted us about breweries in Tampa to visit, he emailed back a couple of times, interested in Service Brewing beer, and where you can get it in Florida. It's not available in Florida. And then when we announce the beer we're doing at the live 200 episode recording, he expressed interest in getting a hold of that. And I said, well, that's probably not going to happen. It's not a whole lot of it that we brewed. So I started to feel like I was kind of blowing him off, which wasn't true. He seems like a nice guy, and I was enjoying emailing back and forth with him. So I had said, look, I appreciate your interest in my career and what I'm doing for a living, so I'll send you a box of beer. Just send me your address. And he said, oh, I'll send you back some beer. And I said, great. So we set up a little trade.
Can I just say right now that anyone else who asked for this will not get it. This is a one-time deal. Keith is not now opening himself up anybody else who says.
I can't really afford to send a whole lot of boxes, but every now and then it's okay. So so everything worked out fine, and what he sent back was a bunch of beer from his local area and some of his homebrew. So I said, if you're okay with it, I'll reach out to the guys and see about actually sampling some actual real live homebrew in our podcast. So here we are. So we've got two beers from Mike, and the first one that we're gonna try is his On the Hop New England Style IPA, 8% ABV, and he actually sent a little like printout what his take on these beers are. So here we go.
I think this is great. And yeah, I think this is something actually that
shows passion. So it's passion and interest in what you're doing.
And that all homebrewers, I mean, that's kind of like anytime you are doing a vision for something, right? Like actually putting it on paper, writing it out, what it is that you want to achieve or what it is that you did. It helps to solidify the thing and make it more real.
So here we go. 8% ABV. He does not know the IBUs. So not applicable, it says.
I don't know either.
So
of any beer that I've ever brewed.
So this juicy IPA had all of its hops additions at Flame Out. 1 ounce each of Grapefruit Experimental, J-Lime, and Otto Supreme. So I'm not actually familiar with...
cool so far.
I mean, experimental hops come and go, and so that may be something that I've come across, but I've never utilized J-Lime or Otto Supreme that I can remember.
No.
One day after active fermentation, it was dry hopped with 2 ounces of Comet, Grapefruit Experimental, and Otto Supreme. So a little bit of dry hopping there. So this is the first thing we got. There's no label to talk about, so let's just talk about what it looks like in a glass.
Yeah,
Raymond, what's it look like, buddy? All right, so in a glass, this is a very orange IPA, very cloudy. Nice
appropriate
beer
for the style.
More style.
It's kind of got that peach nectarine kind of look to it, but with maybe just a touch more orange than you'd see in something along those lines. Yeah, very appropriate.
I feel like it looks exactly like it's supposed to. We're all on target so far. Yep. And the aroma, I feel like, is also super on target. Is that the way you feel too, Keith?
It is. There's a little bit of a, I don't know, maybe slight little kind of dankness, pininess that maybe...
Okay, that's not as citrusy.
Not as citrusy or as juicy in the aroma, but I definitely get a lot of that kind of citrusy, juicy kind of thing going on.
Yeah. I think that dank is kind of a... And possibly veering into pine is not a bad way to say it at all. There is definitely some citrus on the aroma too, but there is just a little bit of that...
There's some other fruit in there that I might... Maybe passion fruit or something like that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Go ahead and take your sips, gents, so I will make sure there's no dead air while you do that. All right. My turn. There's dead air.
There's
swear to God.
No, this is good. It's low on the bitterness, which is typical for New England style IPA. It's got some juiciness to it. Kind of tangerine, maybe
absolutely.
A touch of almost like maybe mango in there.
I was
going to
say apricot for me. Apricot,
okay, there you go.
Yeah, that's good. I think that's it. That's it.
It's interesting. It's a super light malt body, so it drinks super easy. It's not a lot of complexity to the malt, which is the way it should be. And then I think so in the write up the initial hop addition was at Flame Out. Is that
correct?
Right? So, and then it was dry hopped. So that's interesting. I'm curious about how it kind of may or may not have changed, not having at least some sort of like a base hop run through during the boil, just maybe to give it a little bit more tooth.
Well, it's also interesting. It said 1 day after active fermentation, which is a little early maybe to dry hop, but, as a home brewer, maybe that's just the time you had to do it. I don't know, but yeah, it's actually a little low on the carbonation, which I think maybe a little bit of that would help out a little bit. But
yeah.
But on the other end of the spectrum, I think we've had a couple of them, and I know I've been enjoying them when I get a chance to try them. Those milkshake, you know, IPAs that have a little bit of that kind of creamy lactose flavor. Lactose, so that's kind of that's playing a little bit. Like the carbonation subdued, right. But it's actually has a little bit of a creamy feel. So I'm kind of drinking it like that, but I don't know if that, obviously you didn't say lactose was added. So
what it reminds me of a little bit is actually some of the real kind of hop water beers that have come out, like the Hop Hash. Not that it's that intense, but the mouthfeel and then the just letting the hops be what you taste.
Yeah,
it's very reminiscent of that for me. Like that kind of what I refer to that, I guess it was like last year, maybe the year before. You just saw a lot of what I called like hop waters that just seemed to really want to showcase what the hops did. Yeah. And that's definitely in the same line that I would do this, but perhaps a New England IPA kind of take on that.
Yeah.
I'm curious about these hops that he used, because I like what I'm getting off of them. And I'm curious about other either commercial beers that may also use some of these.
I can't say that J-Lime or Otto, which are Otto Supreme, I'm not too familiar with them. I mean, I think Comet, we've all had beers with Comet, so that one's fairly familiar. But yeah, these are relatively new to me, at least, but I would assume J Lime has some sort of lime type character to it. That would make sense.
Yeah, it's a Yakima Valley. I think you know one of their experimental lines. I'm trying to do a little bit of quick 6.9% alpha acidity. That's what the AA is, alpha acidity, right? Or is it the AA alpha something else? I always read it as alpha acidity.
No, I think that's right.
So let's see what we have here. Well, these are someone's tasting notes. This is at the Hop Whisperer. That's a thing, you guys. They reviewed the experimental J-Lime hops in 2015. So not something brand new, but got from Yakima Valley. I did see that they are available from Yakima Valley's website. 6.9% AA. A mild hop aroma. Grassy and herbal is what he got off of that hop aroma from them as well. Let's see if we got the talent. On the palate, got a mild herbal hop note with a bit of tangy citrus. So those aren't the official notes on it. This is just the Hop Whisperer's take on that. And let's see what we can find about Otto Supreme. Otto Supreme, also a Yakima Valley hop. And we'll see what their official notes on Otto Supreme are. Curious, too. Like, I am always, just from a home brewing perspective, interested in pellets versus whole leaf. Not that it necessarily has to make any difference. I think it's more of a technical kind of procedural thing, how people deal with whole leaf hops. I love the idea because I like it to look like what it is. Just like it's something I'm eating. Like I have an aversion to chicken nuggets because what is that?
But I honestly don't think it makes really that big of a difference. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's those pellets are just going to expand and do what they're going to do. So
the official line on the Otto Supreme from Yakima Valley is an alpha acidity of 14.6%, so much stronger than the other. The notes are aroma, fruity, peach, pineapple, orange, guava.
Well, that peach, which you, I think that,
guava too.
Yeah, that guava and that peach, which I think peach, apricot could be similar. That's kind of what you were picking up on. Yeah. I think a lot of that one's coming through.
But the guava may be on the aroma, too. That may be the thing more so than apricot, even, is that kind of guava.
I'm actually enjoying this quite a bit. I think I would, you know, and homebrew's tough when you're bottle conditioning.
Yep.
You know, I think a little more carbonation would enhance the experience, but I really like the flavor of this a lot.
One thing this homebrew does not have that a lot of homebrews have is that homebrew taste. You guys know what I'm talking about. Yeah. We've all had it. And I think it usually comes from using prepared malts, either liquid malt extract or just kind of relying too much on the DME, on malt extract of some sort. And there's a syrupiness and a distinct, I don't know if it's an artificialness, but it is kind of a canned kind of flavor in a way that even sometimes regardless of style is it has a absolutely. Through line. You mm-hmm. can have a Saison that has it, you could have a porter that has it. And this doesn't have any of that. So did he mention this is an all grain brew or
did not? No. I would guess generally from the quality and the idea of, you know, doing, you know, this many hops and dry hopping and whatnot, I would guess that he's doing all grain or
partial mash
or he got lucky. Yeah. I don't know which. Yeah.
Or that too. It's
been so long since I brewed a beer.
It hasn't been that long. I brewed a beer in October. That was only like what?
2015.
No, of last year. We did one for the Halloween
party.
Four or five
in the last 5 years, right?
Yeah, that counts toward my six. my portion of the six of the last few years. No, I like this a lot. I feel like it's really good. I feel like he probably set out to what he wanted to do too. And I also think on you for sending your beer to somebody else to drink potentially on a podcast.
Yeah, look, think about it like this.
Could have gone lots of ways, you guys.
Assuming this guy has most of this on a kegerator and is drinking it himself, I don't know if he's bottle conditions everything or not, but I mean, I'd drink this coming home from work every day.
It's good. What was the ABV again?
8% on this.
Super surprising. Yeah. I don't taste that.
Not at all.
I don't taste an 8% on this. I do. My one piece of, I don't know if it's advice, but my one personal preference here would be to have it carbonated a little bit more fiercely. I think that having that additional movement in it would bring both the aroma, would make it pop more. Yeah,
and I will say in our email communications, he was talking about wanting to send back the beer after I had sent up some stuff, and he was waiting on something to get carbed. Yeah. So he might have been waiting on this to send as long as possible for them. It might have been this one. I don't know.
Yeah. But.
All right. You want to hit the second one here?
Let's do it. I'm going to pass my glass.
So the second beer that Mike J sent us is the Dark Dessert Stout. So this
here we
is
go.
8.6% ABV, 20 IBUs. And let me see here. This stout is a thick and hearty stout, which had tart cherries and chocolate added to the fermentation. The cherry flavor became lost with all the malt flavor. So he got his personal opinion in there. So we'll find out for ourselves.
We'll tell you if there's cherry in here, Mike. Don't worry about that. Oh, this is pouring really nice. Raymond, talk about it being poured here, because like we're getting a nice little gun show here with this beer
nice, poured. Nice thick pour with a really beautiful dark kind of chocolatey head to it.
Yeah, really nice dark, you know, kind of dark khaki. And I know that you guys, I don't know, like we're looking at them all now. So they all poured with that nice little maybe 5-6 centimeter head on it. And it's faded pretty fast. But it was nice to see that movement. And it was really super pretty as it poured. Now that it's in the glass and it's settled down a little bit already, you got kind of that bubbles around the outside edge. Again, that kind of chocolate milk kind of color. There is some nice lacing and stickiness to the glass as we move it around as well. And I may have snuck a smell on this, guys, it's pretty good. It smells pretty good.
I mean, if the cherries are lost in the flavor, it's not in the nose.
No.
I mean,
it's the roastiness and coffee.
Yeah, it's really nice. There's a nice kind of sweet cherry, kind of dry cocoa, like hot cocoa packet kind of chocolate to this.
Yeah, kind of that kind of dry.
Yeah. I mean, it's, I mean, they're, you know, the cherry is definitely coming through on the aroma.
I agree 100%. There's definitely a chocolate covered cherry type vibe smelling this. And so far on looks and aroma, I'm all in on what you're doing so far. I don't want to build this up too much, but you're setting me up to build this up. So let's just leave it at that. Keith had his first taste. Tell us what you had.
I'll tell you what comes through the most in the taste is the tartness of the cherries.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure.
Dude, there's cherry all in over this business.
I mean, I don't get that sweet like cherry cordial, but like that tart, Like true
eating
tart.
A cherry, yeah,
true chart. Tart cherry is definitely all in this, you know?
For me, it is a true dark cherry flavor and like an element of almost like smoke. Of a burnt something in a good way.
I think the malts like you were saying in the nose, the roastiness is what's coming through, but it's coming through in a little bit of a smoky way. But it's not smoky. It's not like a smoked beer. But I get what you're saying.
I get that too.
It's almost like a smoke and a little bit of like kind of a slightly chalky kind of flavor, like that chalky cocoa. Chocolate meets roasted malt kind of thing.
It is not as sweet as I anticipated, and it actually has a good amount of savory quality. Mm-hmm. Like, honestly, my salivary glands, not to get gross, are working overtime. Like, they're... Mm-hmm. Sorry. But, like, I am... It is the equivalent of, like... Not that there's salt in this or anything, but it's like that. It's
there's a little bit of saltiness.
Yeah,
yes.
And I feel like this is really interesting. It is. The aroma made me think that this was going to be sweeter and boozier, and it is neither sweet nor, other than the cherry, than some innate cherry sweetness, but is also more tart than sweet. Other than that, it is really, I don't taste the alcohol. Do you guys?
Not really.
Not in a way that you wouldn't.
I mean, I believe it's 8.6%, but not because it's like super hot. I think one of the things I'm most impressed with this beer as a homebrew is the feel of it. I feel like a lot of homebrews that I get to try, and even regular beers from breweries, especially stouts like this, would be on the thinner side, and you want a little bit fuller feel. I don't know what he might have added malt wise to kind of increase that, but it's actually, it's got, I mean, it's not, I wouldn't say oily or thick or chewy, but it's got a little bit denser feel. And usually with a homebrew of a kind of imperial stout like this, they usually tend to be thinner than you would expect from a production brewery. And this has actually got a really nice feel to it.
Well, you said oily, and I know you said not so much, but I feel like there's a... I don't know that I've ever used that to describe a beer, honestly. And that's probably a good word to add to my beer tasting vocabulary. I do feel like this has a real slickness to it, but not all the way through. It's not a singular mouthfeel like that. I feel like at the beginning and end of my palate, it is slick, and there's a little bit thicker in the middle, but... What I really like, I think, and how it relates to the mouthfeel is the amount of carbonation that's in this. And it's not buzzy and it's not flat. It's just a really nice sweet spot that, as Raymond takes a huge yawn, that really, I feel like, emphasizes the parts of this beer that make it interesting.
Yeah. No, I mean, this is... I'm generally impressed with both of these beers. I mean, I would, if a production brewery put out either one of these, I think you would drink them and go, oh, this is a really good beer. You know, I mean,
impressed. I'm jealous. Like, and I'm partly angry. Like, if the beers I was making at home tasted like this, I would probably brew more often, you guys. This is legitimately, there are a lot of homebrewers that make really good beer. But, you know, it doesn't always come to us in a box. So,
that's true.
But let me just go ahead and go off the rails a little bit and say, great job.
Yeah, very well done. These are excellent.
We honestly went into this with a little bit of trepidation because the last thing we wanted to do, we're not going to give a false review. We're not going to smile through our teeth and be like, oh, this is great, and it not be. And then we also don't want to offend one of the five people who listen to this podcast. We're really at a crossroads.
We're at five, we're being generous again.
I know. I was really at a crossroads about what to do with this.
He was smiling through his teeth when he said
it. I was. But I like both of these. Of the two, I prefer the stout, just because of the overall ride. Mm-hmm. I think the New England IPA is interesting for a different take on that style. Whether it was intentional or not, I kind of got a different thing out of it.
Yeah.
But with this, I legitimately would probably grab this before some other comparable commercial options, honestly. Whereas with the New England IPA, there's so many, like, really, if I want something super juicy and, you know, there are other things I might pick before, but this, I don't know. And cherry is one of those flavors I'm sensitive to, where I feel like if it is in any way Tylenol cherry, children's chewable cherry, I will just drain pour it. And this is really good, dark cherry flavor that comes through on this. I'm so sorry that whatever he had didn't have that, because ours does.
Absolutely.
All right.
Mike. Well, you know, sometimes things open up over time. Yeah. So, you know, whenever he wrote this a week or two ago, maybe it wasn't really coming through. So
we've got another piece of listener feedback. This is from Jeremy F. Spragoo.
Wow, that's three listeners all in one.
His
maybe everybody
again. We might actually have five.
Come on,
do we count?
I'm counting on it, you guys. You don't listen to this podcast.
I don't. I do. But that's, okay, that's,
we know,
like,
Andrew listens. That's four.
And Lee listens. That's five. We have five listeners.
All right. So this is Jeremy's review. He titled his review on iTunes "Fun." I enjoy listening to this on my way to and from work. Wish you'd get a bit deeper on the brewing part, but you guys seem to have a lot of fun. 5 stars.
Ooh, thank you.
Thanks a lot, Jeremy.
We are the champions.
I just want to say that
except
between
in homebrew,
Beestock and Jeremy,
we
got all the potties. We're really doubling down on our homebrew this week, so I hope you guys appreciate it. It's not ours, so don't get me wrong.
Somebody's.
Yeah. We never said anything about doing our homebrews.
Hey, and if you guys brew beer, let us know. Yeah, reach out to us. Sure. Call us. Ed.
Or send us some.
Well, whatever. Don't knock yourselves out. Alrighty. You guys, actually, we have another piece of listener feedback. We actually got an email this week.
An email?
We got an email.
People still do that?
Carolyn Wood sent us an email. Hi, Carolyn. And the subject is a new brewery in Albany, Georgia. So, and I need to say it, it's Albany is how locals say it, is Albany. I don't say that because I forfeit my roots. I grew up in Daugherty County, which is where Albany, Georgia is. Mm-hmm. I actually went to Worth County Schools up until I was a little bit older. So I know that area really well. Okay. And so Carolyn emailed us and said, just to put this on your radar, a new local farm-to-table brewery. They do crowlers and supply local establishments. I don't know where they stand or what their plans are for distribution further afield. It's called Pretoria Fields. Have either of you guys heard of this place?
No.
Mm-mm. I checked them out on their Facebook, and they have kind of their slogan is some variation, I don't have it in front of me, of brewed by farmers, farmed by brewers is their kind of like idea. And so they work with local farms. It seems to be exactly like Carolyn described it, that they do these kind of hyper-local small batch. They seem to have a tap room based on the website. Again, or I didn't dig super deep in this. But I love the fact that Georgia's recent beer law changes are making things like this happen in relatively small town. I mean, Albany's not super small town, but it's smaller town for sure, especially compared to our three or four metropolitan cities. I mean, I'm saying that with Savannah with 140,000 people in the metro area. Right. So there's Atlanta, and then there's literally everything else. But I think that's pretty spectacular, and I wish these folks all the best. That's super cool that they're able to do that. So if you're in the Albany area and that's something you want to check out, you can go to PretoriaFields.com or check them out on Facebook as well. Anyway, she finished up with a pretty big deal for those of us in Albany enjoying your podcast. So thanks, Carolyn.
That's great. Yeah, nice if I'm ever there, I will check them out for sure.
Nice of you to reach out and let us know whenever I go back to drive past the old homestead, which I do about once every 10 years. I'll be sure to go by there. And house is not looking good, you guys. Last time I went by, it was really in shambles. All right. Homebrewing. I feel like we covered it this week. Do I need to ask Raymond how his homebrewing is coming? Because it's probably the same as mine, so I don't feel like I need to ask. I do want to talk about running a little bit. And Raymond, I know you've been getting out there and pounding the pavement. Tell us, everybody, how your training is going.
I have been. It's still, you know, it's still sporadic. I am not I'm having the hardest time getting back into just the rhythm of doing this regularly. It's really been a struggle. And work and usual stuff are just getting in the way, and I'm letting them get in the way. So it's frustrating from a couple of different perspectives. But I get out there every now and then, and I'm slowly increasing the mileage a little bit and the speed a little bit. I'm not too worried about those things at this point, but I do want to get up to miles. And I used to maintain a pretty good 3-mile run on a regular basis, and I'd love to get back to that just so that I could knock out a 5K if I ever wanted to. And a 10K is not too much of a stretch, but I'm just not there yet.
Well, you know, I came to the conclusion a couple of years ago that I honestly don't like races. There's something about the lineup. I mean, the whole thing. And I don't know if it's part of it's like a claustrophobia thing, or if it's comparing me to, you know, the initial kind of lineup and the density of some of these races I was doing, or if it's the comparing myself to other people part. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it is, but I came to the conclusion that I do not enjoy races. And if you kind of take the races out of your training regimen, you know, you don't necessarily have things to train for.
Right.
You know, and that's that for me, especially beginning of my running, was a big motivator.
Yeah,
it was
absolutely.
Like, I've got this race coming up. I need to make sure that distance feels comfortable. I'm not going to hurt myself. And then bonus, if in some way I can be competitive in whatever kind of scope I want to frame that in. And just over the past few years, I've just found that less and less of a motivation, and honestly, more of a like an anxiety inducing for me personally, just because I didn't really enjoy it. So why do it? They're not free, you know, like I'm paying money, and sometimes this money goes to charity or goes to whatever. And I that's all great. I don't want to diminish that. But for me personally, I wasn't getting enjoyment out of doing races. And when I stopped doing that, I found my motivation changed pretty, just alongside, you know, proportionally with that. And so what I've been trying to do is I've been trying to find the enjoyment of running again. And it's hard to do that because it's work. And like anything that is work, I mean, I feel like there can be enjoyment in that. And so I'm trying to find the right mix of things. So over the past couple of weeks, I've been making myself exercise twice a day. And I'm lucky that I have a schedule that's flexible that lets me do this. And so, and only for limited time. So it's like 30 minutes to 45 minutes twice a day. Because I've really been trying to knock off those last couple of pounds that I've been holding on to. And the only way to do it, calories in, calories out, right? Mm-hmm. So adjusting diet and exercising more. And I have been running for the enjoyment of running for as long as I want to. You know, I tell myself I'm going to go out for 45 minutes and I've got a couple of routes. I know what's going to take me if I walk it, and I know what's going to take me if I run it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've got a couple that I know if I split the difference, what I'm going to come back with. So, you know, I know that I'm confident in that I could run a 5K right now. The problem is that when I'm running right now, I'm really sprinting. Like I'm kind of, for me, running very fast. Mm-hmm. I'm running around an 8-minute mile when I run, but I don't run the full distance at that. And I do think if I were to run a race now, I'd probably break myself because I wouldn't let myself walk. I would try to keep that pace, which probably wouldn't be great for me. But I'm honestly enjoying that rhythm of running when I want to run, walking when I want to walk, and not caring. And I think I have that flexibility because I'm forcing myself to do this twice a day of something. If it's walking, if it's running, if it's yoga, if it's doing like resistance band type workouts, I don't have like a weight set and I'm not paying for a gym. So if I'm doing something physical twice a day, you know, so for anywhere from an hour to an hour and a half a time a day in total, what a difference is making. And the other thing that I feel like is helping, especially with that weight loss, is I've kind of come over to Keith. I'm kind of to the dark side. I haven't had meat in a while, man. I feel like I'm wasting away. I'm slowly disappearing. Yeah. I'm like Marty McFly over here. There's like no hand.
Yeah, I think that when you cut out red meats and, you know, and those kinds of, I don't know if you're still eating poultry or anything like that.
Fish sometimes.
Yeah.
Fish and, is,
yeah.
And I still leaner will occasionally, things, yeah. I mean, eggs and I've cut out cheese, all so eggs occasionally.
Cheese is a big thing. Yeah. I think cheese and dairy is pretty huge for when it comes to that initial weight loss. But yeah, I mean, cutting out those things, you'll see a big drop in weight pretty quickly. So those things are higher calorie.
Yeah.
So they'll carry a lot of that. So.
And I was never like a big cheese guy. Like, you know, I like pizza, but I don't eat cheese.
I'm a big cheese guy.
Right. Yeah. And I know lots of people who are. And so I feel like that was a little bit easier. But as a part of this, trying to kind of move toward just more plant-based stuff, it's been just very eye-opening to like honestly try to do it. Yeah. I'm trying not to be militant about it. Like, I feel like you have to be, especially in the middle for me, I have to be flexible and allow myself that if I'm at some place and that's like, you know, not to be rude, not to be whatever, and try not to put myself in those positions too, but also just because it's a health thing, but it's starting to become an ethical thing quickly, which is very interesting.
The ethical side of it is where you start to make hard line decisions. Correct. If it's a health thing and you say, I just don't want to eat as much red meat as I used to, and you occasionally partake, I mean, that's, you know, it's not gonna kill you, you know, but it's probably healthier, you know.
Yeah.
So
but after a couple of weeks, like, I do not like the texture of chicken. Like, there are all these things now that, like, the other day, like, I just took some off somebody's plate and I was like, oh, this is weird.
Yeah. I've been you know, vegetarian or pescatarian or vegan for, you know, since, you know, 90, you know, five, you know, I mean, it's been years and years and years.
Are you saying you can't relate to my current struggles?
There's always a struggle when you make a change in any way in your life, where you have to make that change. But I came to the realization, I think, that, and it takes, I mean, just thinking about it, I'm like, I don't really think, like, people say, oh, you want to eat chicken, blah, 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 because chicken is just one of those things that's almost, you know, just there. I mean, it's always there. It's always there, and it's always an option. It's always everywhere. And I was just like, I don't think I ever really liked it. You know, it's like, whether it be texturally or taste-wise, I mean, unless you just, you know, drenched it in cheese and tomato sauce or fried it.
If you fry it, that's the thing. Not, if you deep
it's just
fry
not
it,
that good.
Here comes Raymond. To me. Raymond's moving in fast. Raymond, look, who look, owns chicken is, in his this yard, is,
this
is going to be like,
this was my
them.
This was my opinion on it, and I don't miss it at all. And there are even some, like, you know, alternatives that are so texturally similar that I'm just like, I didn't miss the texture. Now, there are some things that I didn't miss the texture on, like the texture of a hamburger is very specific, and I didn't necessarily miss, I like that idea of texturally having that kind of thing, have that kind of bite back and whatever, but I don't necessarily want either the ethical or the calories or the fat that goes with it. But over the years, I've come to accept the fact that the alternatives are the alternatives. And if I'm in the mood for a sandwich, but I don't really consider it
a
burger, like, there's no replacement for bacon.
Right.
But you can, there are other options, and if you can adapt to that, you can enjoy them.
And I feel like that's the first thing to get over is not making it meat substitutes, just making it a thing for what it is.
Right.
You know, like, if you're doing whatever your meal, it's not like I'm subbing the meat and spaghetti and meatballs for, like, tofu or whatever else. It's I'm doing a different meal. This is not meat. This is not a meat substitute. We're trying to extract that. No. Raymond, you are all up on the chicken.
Well, only because, all right, so my kids have been vegetarian for years. My son's been a vegetarian since he was four. So we have always supported him. He made that decision himself. And my wife and I are not vegetarians, but we haven't had meat in the house. I mean, we haven't cooked meat in years. We do substitutes. There are a couple of good things out there.
Yeah,
but,
for sure.
But I've been known, we go out to eat, I'll get a burger, I'll get something along those lines. But even recently, I've started cutting that out. I get vegetarian options whenever I go out pretty regularly. But I have been craving fried chicken for the last 3 or 4 days. It is, that is, if there's a thing.
Well, you're not craving the, I mean, maybe the juiciness and then the fried. So like the crunchy and then the juicy. But I don't, I like, because I do, I will do that too. There's something about that. But like chicken, like, I don't know. It's got to be that crispy.
It's the whole thing.
I'll share my recipe for fried cauliflower. It's not as good. Again, don't replace the meat with something else. You're not going to be happy. All right, I'm going to get off this before I start talking about like animals and stuff. Yeah, there's a part of the show we go to now, and Raymond talks about books.
And what about reading? There's a leisure time activity that will help you learn things you'd like to know about many subjects.
Raymond's Book Corner.
Oh, boy. And Raymond's Book Corner is where Raymond tells us about books that no one wants to read. Obviously, because no one also buys these off Audible. But you can. You can get a audibletrial.com/brewdrinkrun, and you can have someone read this book to you. Or you can go to our website, click on the show notes for this episode, 199, and find a link to buy this book on Amazon.com. If you do that, if you follow that link, we get a little kickback, which we appreciate. Raymond, what's your book this week?
All right, so I decided for this week that I might as well go with your description, and I'm going to give you a book that you will not want to read, that you will have zero interest in, and is not available on Audible.
How is this different than every other week? But go ahead.
There's lots of books I give. So this one's called, and I've honestly been reading this book, I've read through it 3 or 4 times in the last couple of weeks, called Draw It With Your Eyes Closed, The Art of the Art Assignment. So this has a very particular use, and most people don't have it, but it's a collection of really off-the-wall, crazy, unusual art assignments mm-hmm. that I have been recycling and modifying to my own purposes for an experimental drawing class that I'm teaching.
Nice.
And it's so much fun. They're just these off-the-wall things. Some of them I won't even bother trying because I know that they will go nowhere in my classroom. There's some really crazy stories in there because it's a kind of a collection of assignments that different artists were given at some point during their careers, their academic careers. And there's some really crazy stories in there. So some of those are really interesting. And then some of the assignments are just absolutely practical and useful. And I've used them multiple times in class.
There you go. Draw With Your Eyes Closed, The Art of the Art Assignment. Just go to Amazon, or actually go to our website. They click the link to go to Amazon. We won't bother you with trying to get an audiobook of that. Unless Raymond wants to make one, which would be fantastic. He's not volunteering. We'll be right back. Back. Thanks for bearing with us over that extended break while we had to deal with some business. We are back with our big beer for this episode. I'm going to turn it over to Keith, and I'm going to go take care of some business.
I'm going to take over because Keith is actually still carving away at the wax on this bottle. This seems to be a well-coated bottle of beer, but the bottle cap is coming off. No pop, but hey, it's off, and we got an open bottle.
So we have ourselves one bottle of the Stoic from Deschutes Brewing. They call themselves Brewing or Brewery. Deschutes Brewery. All right, okay. And this is the 2015 bottle of the Stoic. This is a Belgian style quad, and if you want to go back in time and listen to another podcast, you can have us hear us listening to not the Stoic, but now we're going to kind of do the reverse order and enjoy the Stoic.
Is this really a 2015 bottle?
That's what it says. Right there. See?
Huh.
Okay. Raymond, why don't you tell us what the label looks like while you're looking at that?
All right. So, you know, this bottle is, it's 750 milliliter and is what we're drinking out of here. Oh, it is a 2015.
That's 22 ounce.
Oh, sorry, 22 ounce. My bad. So I picked this bottle. We'll get there in a second. But the nicer kind of raw paper wine label style label. And this one is, it looks very medieval, as which is kind of appropriate mm-hmm. for the Belgian style quad. It's got this nice kind of lettering to it, medieval style. And has a figure, kind of a monk looking figure. I'm going blind and I can't really see it. It's kind of tiny. nicely printed label, very simple. And does anybody know what the WCJT in the corner is?
White collar Justin Timberlake.
Yeah. Oh, I think that's probably right.
Well done. Well done. That Thanks, was off guys. The cuff.
It was just right there.
You okay, could, I don't know. Yeah. I'm a little surprised that this is a 2015 because I picked it up at the around Thanksgiving of this year at the bottle.
Oh, that might have been the last time they did it.
And maybe I picked it up at the
research. Does anyone do any research around here?
Absolutely not.
Okay. So, I can barely remember not the Stoic. I don't even remember the story behind the Stoic yeah, and the not to, the Stoic, but
I was in Virginia, Roanoke, for Thanksgiving.
They're not producing, but they have the tap room open.
They have a tap room open, and they had bottles at the tap room, and so I picked this up there and was pretty excited to find it because I knew that we had done the not the Stoic, but had never had this.
So this is kind of a reverse engineering of this beer, I guess, that we had the sequel or the companion to it, but not the base beer or the original beer. I'm going to go really quickly, I think, just to refresh our memories. I'll pull up Keith's spreadsheet real quick and read his notes on Not the Stoic.
Okay.
Is that going to be helpful or not?
I don't think I have
it. I don't know. Maybe.
All right. Quadruple brewed with pomegranate molasses, 15% aged in... What?
No, I'm just remembering.
Yeah. 50% Asian oak wine barrels, 15% Asian oak rye barrels. The beer comes in at 12% ABV and has a best after date of 4/22/15. Seems there's some rather passionate debates about the quality of the ingredients of the original beer called the Stoic. This was a reaction retaliation to said opinions. The beer pours with a cloudy purple brown color. This beer does not have that. Well, I don't know, maybe a little bit in the light. Not a lot of head coming from the aged bottle shared between the three of us. I get some big fruit aromas from this beer, mostly your typical quad-related dark fruits, but there's a little tart but sweet pomegranate coming out of the nose. The taste starts with some rich malt and a little sweet caramel. The dark fruit is on the lighter side with some cherry and mild raisins that is joined by a bit of tart pomegranate. Some mild wine-like notes eventually make their way out of the beer, but the rye barrel is sadly gone from the taste if it was ever there. On the lighter side for this style, both in feel and flavor intensity, which is not to say this beer isn't complex. Big thanks to Lee for pulling this complex quad out of his cellar to share. Yeah, this is something I just picked up just on the roads. I think maybe in Charleston, something okay. like that.
You said by the three of us.
So,
but
say again what...
We did it on the podcast.
What yeah. Not the Stoic was?
Not the Stoic with the ABV or the style? Or what?
Well, I'm reading the bottom. It says, the Stoic, malt beverage brewed with pomegranate,
yep.
with 16.5% being aged in oak wine barrels and 16.5% being aged in oak rye whiskey barrels.
So the difference here, according to your notes, are 15% in oak wine, 15% in oak rye.
Okay. So they made minor adjustments to create a minorly different beer.
And reading your review, I do remember that beer was the reaction. And So
obviously.
I kind of had to refresh my memory, too, about exactly what the deal was. It seems like people just really didn't like it.
There was a bunch of jerk-offs who didn't like this beer, so they made a different one. That was nearly the same and said, you're going to love it. Right.
Yes, basically. Exactly. Okay. And what basically has equivocated to the Stoic have a 3.9 on Beer Advocate and Not the Stoic having a 4.2. So there you go.
All right. It worked.
That's what happens when you give in, when you give in to the masses. 95% on Rate Beer for the Stoic here. Right. The beer in the glass, I feel like, has a really nice look. I mean,
Let's be honest. It does not have a nice look for a quad.
No,
right.
It doesn't.
For style, no. But it's not an unappealing looking beer.
Yeah, it's a. I'm super, it honestly looks a lot like the New England style IPA we had earlier today.
I think your glass is very different than my glass.
I just had first pour. I didn't have
very
second pour,
clear so. Compared to yours.
Oh, is it?
Mine actually looks a lot like, even more like the.
Oh, interesting. Because I had first pour, so I shouldn't have any dregs or whatever, but maybe it was more aggressive just being first pour, or who knows.
I was excited to have this.
Yeah, exactly. But you're right. It doesn't look like a quad. You know, with a quad, we are expecting that dark brown purplish color like you described, not the Stoic having.
Yeah.
That description to me reads much more like I would expect a quad. This is, Raymond, how would you describe this color?
I do see some purpley kind of notes in this. It's, I mean,
but
it's
not dark brown. Like, it's not.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's not dark brown.
Quads are typically more like a reddish brown, like dark color. I mean, they're. It's like a. I mean, yeah. I mean, this is not what I would typically look for in a quad.
No, I think I said this earlier in about the IPA. It's got that kind of nectarine, kind of plum juice look to it. It's, except it's, I don't know, it's a little uglier than that. It's
well, quads aren't pretty beers.
No,
they
aren't.
Yeah, they're really.
But it is. But again, it's not a quad looking beer though. No. It's not that brownish reddiness that
so it's
that
got
you
the
expect
ugly,
with.
Just not the right color.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. And you guys already talked about the label. Have you talked about the label?
Yeah, we talked about the label.
Yeah, I figured you guys. We talked about that. While
you killed some time while I was taking care of business. Aroma on this is.
I actually like the aroma.
I do too. It is. I'm trying to think of the right words. It's
very subtle.
It's sweet. Sweet. And I definitely get that wine barrel part of it
kind
a lot.
Kind of floral too.
But there is also that kind of little bit of woody vanilla coming from that whiskey. And
sandalwood almost, like, there's some weird, like,
but I mean,
these were
rye whiskey barrels, so if there's a little bit of spice and a little bit of that going on, that's where that would come from. I actually really like the aroma on this.
I do too. Like, this is it honestly reminds me of like that kind of 70s cologne kind of thing.
Yes, that's, and you said like you said sandalwood. It's sort of like you go into that sort of like, you know, hippie Indian shop, and they got that kind of, you know, cedar.
You go through the beaded curtain.
That cedar, you know, incense is burning a little bit. It's got a little bit of
that. I'm down with the way this smells, man. I have no problems with that whatsoever. I think it smells great.
Yeah.
It's sweet,
I like
and a little bit spicy. Asian spice.
I think the thing that keeps it a little bit balanced is that wine barrel. It just has that kind of more grapey, earthy thing going on.
Well, if you like grapey and earthy, go ahead and take a taste of that. I don't mean to spoil it, but I totally am getting a big time wine vibe off this.
Oh, wow. But
a hearty, toothy, like a really kind of ferocious kind of a wine flavor.
This does not have, which is probably the knee-jerk reaction people had to it as a quad.
Yeah.
This does not have any of the typical sort of big malt forward, dark fruity, boozy aspects that you would get out of a quad.
I would have thought this a Belgian golden, or like the Dogfish had, like, is it their red and white that's like this? That's so wine-like.
And there's a few of them that were produced. But yeah, this doesn't.
Oh, the Midas Touch.
Yeah,
that
this
may be what I'm
thinking
of. Because that's very grapey too, but has a similar
has
body,
that kind
similar
of grapey
color.
And honey kind of sweetness to it.
Yeah. Oh, I got no problem with this beer. But
I actually really like this
a
lot.
Is it a quad?
Yeah.
Right.
Is it a quad? I don't care, but I mean, I can see how people might, you know, kind of give it the business, but as a beer overall, This is really good, and I actually really like this more than you talk about that 3 point, just under four. I'm like, I think this is better than that. You know, just for the average rating. You know, it's like, this is really interesting. It's really good.
It is really good, and I feel like it has a lot of what I feel like are the best qualities of wine, or what I personally like out of wine. That tannic quality, being able to taste the barrel or the bitterness or that kind of.
There's definitely woodiness going on.
Yeah, the woodiness from that. The sweetness, I feel like the carbonation is very wine-like, and And then it has the elements of like a Belgian golden that I like. And that it does have a little bit of hoppy bitterness or floralness to it. And then it has that real tooth that the malt does give it.
I absolutely agreed with all those notes you had about it having all these wine characters. And I was like, check, 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 check. But this doesn't drink like wine. Mm-hmm. And there are some beers that are wine-like. And we've experienced this certainly with a lot of Dogfish Head beers over the years where you're like, it's sort of like carbonated wine. You know, this. Yeah. I don't feel like that way about this. Even though there's like a laundry list of check marks behind wine-like character, this really still has a genuine beer-like quality to it.
And I think that's the mouthfeel, and it really is the fact that the malts are, despite the color of the beer and everything, the malts are pretty strong in this. It is a... There's a dryness, but also a little bit of a breadiness, not a cracker, but there's a little bit of breadiness. And I feel like the overall mouthfeel is much thicker than a wine. And there's an edge to it that I think a lot of wines don't have that are like this that does just make it much more robust.
There's definitely a doughy, bready character to the malt character, which sort of would do that. It would make it more beer-like. Yeah, this is good.
Yeah.
What's wrong with people?
Did you take that slow move up to the microphone and go, yeah.
Yeah, I had to be cool about it.
So, yeah.
Oh, man. I got to say, I'm super surprised. I mean, I think that the audience reception we talked about, you know, obviously the original kind of push for this, people didn't like, and it caused them, enough people didn't like to cause them to release an antidote or a second version of this beer. The only problem I have with this beer is it being classified as a quad. I feel like if they would have called this a strong ale or whatever else, I don't think there would be any question about what this is. If you're judging it to style, I feel like there are a lot of points that are missing.
Actually, they call it a Belgian styled quad of stirring death.
Because it's not from Belgium.
Complexity.
It's not from Belgium. Yeah. So, you know, it has to be a Belgian styled quad.
Styled. Yeah. Not even style. Styled. With a D.
Styled.
Yes.
I really like this.
I like it too.
I think that honestly, I mean, I can't go back in time and exactly relive having the other, but this beer seems much more in my wheelhouse. What I would regularly go to and look out for this style, for this type of a drink, if I wanted something of this kind of fortitude, like this is great. I would buy this over a traditional quad for me personally in most cases.
Well, I mean, knowing what I know now, I would certainly pick up a bottle of this. I actually would pick up a bottle of Not the Stoic, too. They were both really good if they were options to me. But, you know, I mean, I even if I was looking for a quad and I picked this up, I mean, I can't understand. I don't know. I mean, how purist can you be? I mean, if you pick up a bottle of beer that's good, even if it doesn't fit the guidelines, how are you going to crap on it? I mean, it's like, it's a good beer. It's unique. It's interesting. Isn't this kind of what craft beer is supposed to be about? I don't know.
Well, you did say if you pick up a good beer, and I think that's where we might get into some disagreements with the people out there who really know their beer. It's time for Beer Review Theater.
It's time for Beer Review Theater.
Beer Review Theater is where we shut up for a second and turn to the real experts about beer, the internet. The Stoic has been reviewed. We mentioned the Beer Advocate review for this beer. And I'm going to turn back to Beer Advocate for our theater review this week. This review was written about the Stoic in October of 2015. It doesn't say which vintage that they were reviewing, so I'm not sure if this has any age on it or anything else. But this was written by Plant Shrub. Plant Shrub.
Bring me a shrubbery.
You know, there's no gender icon, which is fine, but there's no avatar. So, you know, you normally default to the gender icon, and that's not there anyway, and that's fine. So with plant shrub, I have to go with the monster from Little Shop of Horrors, which was, what was the name of the plant? It was something too, right? He named it after the girl.
I do not know that movie.
Feed
well
me.
Enough. Well, I know, yeah. I know that, but I don't know the details of that movie well enough.
What was her? This Seymour is the guy's name. The girl.
Feed me, Seymour.
Yeah,
feed me all night long.
And there was the girl. He had the crush on the girl, and it seems like it named the alien plant her name too, but I don't remember what it is. Plant shrub gave the Stoic a 1.98 out of 5. A very creative score. 1.98. That is a look of 3.75, which for me is probably the most, anyway, non quad thing. A smell of 2.5, a taste of 1.5, a feel of 1.5, an overall of a 2, averaging out to 1.98.
Looks great, if a little hazy. Brilliant lazy copper. Aromas of peach, pineapple, pomegranate molasses, and olives.
Olives. Mm. Olives, which I would take to be a saltiness, a sourness, mm-hmm. a...
Vinegar.
And that's on the aroma.
This beer tastes like a Kalamata olive with the pit still in it. Tannic. Vinegaric. Intense. Overbearing. And not pleasant. Oily in a rancid way, if only to characterize everything I just said. Feels a bit slimy, almost like an overly diacetyl vibe, and just ends up tasting really like a Kalamata olive. Would rather use it as a salad dressing than something to directly imbibe. My teeth sort of hurt, like I just unwittingly bit down on some hidden olive pits.
There you go. That's it.
Dude's got olive issues.
Olive issues?
I don't like olives either, but...
I don't like olives either, which would mean that I would not like this beer if it tasted like olives.
Yeah.
I love olives, but this doesn't taste like olives.
No
Audrey Jr., by the way, is the name of the plant.
Thank you, Audrey Jr. Audrey. Audrey's a super cutie. Audrey Jr. So, yeah, it's... I don't get olives. I feel like he was really hung up on olives. The other stuff, the diacetyl, which is what? Cardboard, right? Diacetyl is cardboard or no?
Butter.
Thank you.
Yeah, I don't get anything even remotely close to butter. And if he thinks diacetyl is olive, that's incorrect.
So. Oily in a rancid way. I feel like this has nothing but body.
Yeah.
People can always have different. Like,
maybe he had a bad bottle.
He had a bad bottle. That's true. Knows? I mean, bottles differ, but.
And he may have had this super. I mean, I don't know. Aging is not going to make olives start tasting like.
If he talked about like buttered popcorn the whole time, like he talked about olives, and then he mentioned diacetyl, I'd be like, all right, well, that makes sense. But talk about olives for some reason and then throw out diacetyl, it seems like a guy who learned a new word about beer and just threw it in there, you know?
Yeah. No offense, plant shrub.
Plant shrub.
I hope none was taken.
Just give me a break, shrubby.
I got no problem with this. This reminds me a lot of just, you know, kind of years ago, like when I first started having Belgian beers, when you kind of have that experience with maybe a wit or whatever else, and you start going in and kind of looking for things that are yeastier or, again, start being... But this reminds me of some of my favorite Belgian Goldens, in all honesty. Just wine-like, but with a really nice tooth. I feel like it's a nice mix of alcohol and malt. The hops, what you're getting from this at this point and this beer is not really enough to talk about. That's not really what it's about. There's probably a little bit of bittering or a little bit of texture that it helps kind of fill out the profile. But it's, for me, this is a total winner. I got no problem with this whatsoever.
Oh, man, if I went into some store and saw a 2015 The Stoic on the shelf, I now know, pick one up.
And drink it now, too. Yeah, I feel like if you have one of these that is just sitting around, I don't know why you would wait. I feel like it's really good right now. Go ahead and drink it. But honestly, you know, I would be curious if it's, I wouldn't be surprised, I guess, if it wasn't just as good fresh or fresher than this too. I feel like it's a really good, strong beer.
I think they do this beer. I mean, I was just checking in on Untappd and there was a 2016 vintage. There was 2011. There was different ones listed. Now, that doesn't mean that they actually exist. I mean, if you're talking about Untappd, it's like the Wikipedia of beer. But, you know, I think they've done this on numerous occasions, so there's probably the potential to have this fresh if you can get a hold of it.
And honestly, looking at some of the recent reviews of this beer on Beer Advocate are very high, are fours and above for people who have been tasting this recently. And again, not always noting what their vintage is and how long they've been sitting on it, but it may be one of those things where your mileage may vary too. Like whatever it is you're sensitive to or whatever it is you're looking for, this may or may not be the beer for you. Raymond, this is one you've held on for a little bit and we've talked about doing for several other pairs.
You just said that we picked it up
while you were taking care of business. I just picked this up in Thanksgiving. So
that's true. And it was aged. But we've talked about doing it for several other podcasts. Yeah. I think that's what I was thinking about. Not that you've had it forever, but it's come up in the discussions for other podcasts, and I'm glad we're having it. I'm glad we didn't put it off again.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah,
I'm enjoying this.
Yeah, your final thought, Raven?
It's just super nice. I'm really kind of thrilled with this purchase, and will be looking for it again the next time I go to the tap room.
Keith?
I'm with Raymond's super niceness. This is delicious. I like it.
So
I mean, I would gladly share or drink a whole bottle of this on my own.
I think so. That's one of these big bottles that I think could honestly be personally self-consumed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. For more about us and Brew Drink Run, go to brewdrinkrun.com. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook at Brew Drink Run. Plus, we're all on Untappd. If you want to be a part of the show, you can email us at team@brewdrinkrun.com. Let us know about your home brewing, your running training, or your favorite place to grab a beer. You can also call us at 781-76-DRINK. 781-763-7465. We've got Brew Drink Run t-shirts and technical running shirts available on our website. Click the store link. Our theme music is provided by Morning Lights. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you on episode 200. Cheers.
200.
Cheers.
Cheers.
It's taken almost 200 episodes, but we can clink glasses with the best of them at this point.
We are the Clink Masters.
I thought you said we are the Twink Masters. I was like, I think that's a different thing.
No, I did not say that.
Oh, boy. Feed me, Seymour.